Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's time! You asked for it and you got it at BruceBuffer.com. Championship introductions at a special rate are now provided for all of you as a keepsake for life, like you are being introduced like a champion in the cage. Just go to BruceBuffer.com. Specials for championship introductions, weddings, birthdays, voicemail, and business recordings. I'm here for you if you need me. Check me out at BruceBuffer.com. From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Las Vegas, where the UFC is happening, we are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show we talk about what you think about, but may be afraid to voice. Do not worry. We will talk about it for you. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, politics, UFC, film, TV, you name it, we talk about it. And I'm here with my co-host and partner, TJ DeSantis. TJ, how are you?
I'm good. Your tone there, I don't know if it means I should respond or not, or if you just want to like talk to John Anik because he's already on the line.
Well, you know, I always love to talk to John Anik, but let's just bring John Anik on with a proper introduction. And now our special guest, our frequent guest, my friend, my coworker, and the finest commentator in fighting sports, if not any sport today, a man who's an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to sports, football, you name it. Conversation never ends with this man because he's always got something to say, and it's interesting. Let's bring on John Anik, my boy.
What a great introduction, and humbled to be with you guys. Yeah, frequent guest, probably more accurate than special.
Frequent.
Great to chop it up with you guys. And, you know, TJ and I obviously go way back. So when I walked into the T-Mobile Arena and I saw the extra round set for my guy, you know, it hit me in a good place because obviously if anybody has put in the time as a mixed martial arts commentator, it's my guy, TJ. So I was very happy to see that for our guy, Bruce.
And I know there was ice on the floor of T-Mobile on Saturday night, but I think the extra rounds crew were sitting in the coldest part of that building, directly under an air conditioning shaft. My goodness, it was not good.
Let me tell you, there might have been ice on the floor, but there was fire in the octagon. Holy hell, what a night of fights.
Unbelievable. And I think sometimes, Bruce, for you and me, it's hard to put these cards as a whole in their proper historical context. And anytime you try to do it, like right after the show, people are going to scream recency bias. But this fight card had it all. And I will just tell you as a play-by-play announcer, some of these shows can drag over 8 hours. And I'll just tell you, this one didn't feel like it dragged at all. And there were bouts, the Modafferi bout, the heavyweight bout that weren't particularly great. And yet, the night didn't feel like it dragged at all. It's great having fans back in the arena. I feel like they're louder. They're like making up for lost time per capita, per person. It was a special night.
Can I tell you guys just real quick, you know, I sat on the concourse all night. I didn't have a seat in the arena, which I actually, in hindsight, kind of feel good about because I could hear the crowd pop in a way that was almost removed from the action. It was a more organic sort of feel that I wasn't getting caught off by like the lights and sounds of things more than just the actual emotion from the fans. And my God, when Nick Diaz made that walk, it's one of the biggest pops I think I've heard in mixed martial arts history, honestly.
That, and also when I introduced him, normally I block out the audience because I'm just eye to eye with the eye of the tiger or the fighter. I could hear it, you know, the pop.
You could feel it, right?
I felt it. The pop for Nick, you know, I gave him the biggest thing I could give him at the time, but the pop in the crowd, I mean, they love Nick Diaz, you know, and let me ask you, John and TJ, Dana White said he was impressed by Nick's performance. We all know Nick stopped. Question. Did Nick stop because of the abdominal kicks? Did he stop because his nose might have been, you know, shattered or broke? Or was it just like, I'm done, let me live to fight another day? How do you interpret that, John?
There are a lot of rumblings going around, and I will just say, on the surface, Nick was dealing with a lot of things. He appeared to be in better shape 6 or 8 weeks ago than he actually was on fight night. So I think chief among the issues he was dealing with on the canvas in that moment was his nose. It was busted. He felt like the outcome of the fight was an eventuality, that he was not going to have enough on the feet. And he kind of knew during fight week what he was walking into, a supremely conditioned Robbie Lawler. And it was not an optimal training camp for Nick Diaz. Now, these might sound like excuses without me able to back it up with a bunch of facts as to what he was dealing with. But I expect a much better version if he does turn this around in 4 or 6 months. I really do. I thought he had some moments, but if I'm really analytically dissecting the performance, he looks slow. And he didn't necessarily have that look in his eye. You know, you talk eye of the tiger. For him, it's that patented scowl that makes you think he really wants to hurt a man. So, you know, I don't know if he didn't like the matchup. He seemed to intimate during fight week that it came together quickly. There were myriad issues for Nick Diaz. And, you know, I think the layoff can't be discounted either.
Can I just say that I think it's a good first step back? You know, if he wants to continue, it's a good first step back. I think that's the positive, if you want to spin a positive out of it. It wasn't what a lot of people wanted from Nick, but it also had flashes of what made him so great back in the day. So good first step back, I'll say.
I'm with you on that. Listen, when the fighters walk in, if you notice, Johnny, from your viewpoint, you don't see me on TV, but I don't walk in until the second fighter walks in. The first fighters walk in, then I walk into the octagon. I'm always at the point where the referee's checking him out. I'm literally on the other side of the referee. The fighter and I are looking eye to eye. I can tell. I can see it in the eye. I've said this before on the show. I can tell when they're there and when they're not. And you just said it yourself, John, that the look in his eye, and I didn't see that Diaz. I love Nick Diaz. I didn't see that eye of the tiger fire, you know? When it came in, but still when it was throwing punches and bunches in the beginning and bobbing and weaving and all, but listen, Robbie was in stellar shape. Robbie came in.
The strength and conditioning for Lawler has been a staple of his last four fights, even though he lost the previous four, right? I mean, he's totally rejuvenated in that Sanford MMA gym and really embracing the role of, you know, grizzled veteran, a role that a lot of people felt like a Lawler type wouldn't want to embrace, that he would be, you know, fishing with his son, Glenn, and not, you know, bringing up the young formative year fighters. And that's exactly what he's doing. So a lot of good things to say about Robbie Lawler. And this was the first time I can ever remember watching a Diaz brother where I wasn't convicted in my belief that they were in 25 minute shape. He didn't have the cardiovascular base to go 25 hard minutes. And when you're putting up historically crazy numbers in terms of the output, you know, I think he gassed a little bit and, you know, was going to live to fight another day. But, you know, he's established so much goodwill with the fight game that, like, he can bow out of the fight at that point in time and not take too much shit. You know,
Nick Diaz can do that. Well, I saw.
You're right, John. If it's not Nick Diaz, that man is booed. You know, quitting that way. That man is booed, but not Nick Diaz.
Yeah. Oh, no question. Nobody's even really picking up on that and making an issue of it. It's Nick Diaz, and let's just leave it at that. I saw him about 4 or 6 weeks ago when Adesanya fought, or I forget exactly when that was, and I was in the back after the fight, and Nick walked through, and you're right, John. I mean, he looked incredible shape. I mean, 15 pounds lighter, God knows what. And he was, and I talked about this on the show, and when I was talking to him, he goes, I want him. He goes, I want to fight Adesanya, and he was making a real spectacle of himself in the back.
Yeah,
that was not the Nick Diaz I saw walking the octagon on Saturday night.
Right.
Shape wise. But I love Nick. I want to see him come back. If he wants to come back, it's all about, does he want to come back?
And that's the thing, too. There's money fights there. Like, I know he's always going to throw out guys like Izzy or Usman. You know, maybe we get a rubber match with Robbie. I don't necessarily need to see it. But if Nick wants to fight, like the idea of Nick making a run at a championship or anything like that, stop it. Like, that's not a thing. But Nick making, you know, really fine co-main event type money fights or main event on, you know, the odd big pay-per-view shot or UFC on ESPN type show all day long.
I'm all for it. Let's go forward here because we only have so much time with John today. I'm agreeing with all you guys.
Today's actually one of the few instances where I have a bunch of time for you. So just so you know, my next media hit is not for 43 minutes. So
we got you for the show because I got some pretty interesting shit to talk about here.
At 10:25 a.m. Pacific is my heart out. So
that's my heart out too. I've got an interview with Europe at 10:30. So we're good to
go. Cut me anytime. If the content gets stale, TJ, you can just cut me out of the.
No. Did you just hear Bruce Buffer say shit? Because Bruce just said the shit Bruce has never said shit on the show ever.
Oh my God, that's the first shit. I think I've got 13 F-bombs, but that's the first shot.
Congrats on your first shit there, Buff.
Hey, you know what? All I'm doing is looking at John's shirt, thinking one more sleep. I'm looking at my shirt and saying millions.co, and I'm thinking how much I love Millions, how much I love John Anik, and how much I love that shirt, John.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it turned out well. I appreciate that. You know, again, it's sort of weird how it came together, but as I was telling TJ earlier off the air, you know, one more sleep sort of been a calling card. I started saying it on social media, and then I said it after a weigh-in, walking off the stage, and it kind of stuck. You know, like when I was at ESPN, I would close every show by saying, don't text and drive. And my late boss, Anthony Mormile, was like, dude, you should use that every show. But for one more sleep, I was walking into a hotel in Glendale, Arizona for a pay-per-view earlier this year, and these dudes started chanting one more sleep, and my wheels started churning. And yeah, thanks to Bruce and Millions, we got some merch, and we're off and running.
I thought maybe it's because you have three kids and you always need one more sleep. You just don't have the energy.
That's probably part of it, too.
It's funny you say that, TJ, because that's definitely another audience out there. Like when I go pick up my kids at school, they see the one more sleep gear and that's their association. So I think there's another market out there for it.
There you go. I'm on board. One more nap. I need that. One more nap.
Yeah, there's a whole market for it. Well, listen, everybody watching and listening, you want to go to millions.co. You want to check out John Anik. One more sleep. Be part of John Anik's crew. Mine, I've got, of course, the It's Time shirts, but this is the Buff Life shirt. Right, It's Time, circa 1996. That's the first time I walked in the octagon. Millions.co, check it out. We got athletes from all over the world, every single sport you can possibly imagine, plus Rams cheerleaders. I know Brittany Palmer's talking to him. We're going to make shirts with her artwork on them, the whole bit. And it's great. But one more sleep. Check it out. John Anik. That's the name of the game. Join the Anik team. Okay, let's talk about Valentina Shevchenko. She says she wants to fight till she's 50. I believe she will be able to. She is just... probably in my 25 plus year history in the octagon in the sport of MMA, this is the most devastating female fighter flyweight along with Amanda Nunes that I have ever seen in my life. She is a machine. And when she turned it on to turn it off, it was over. It's like, okay, let's finish. Right? Amazing.
Yeah. We could spend 20 minutes on Valentina Shevchenko. She's probably the closest thing we have to Tom Brady in MMA in terms of her desire to compete as long as humanly possible, because this is what she loves to do. And she knows no other life than the sacrificial life of a martial artist. So she's so conditioned to making all of these sacrifices, and she has found a comfort zone in terms of her, you know, work-life balance that she very much is aspirational to compete into her 50s. You know, like you say 50, it's like, I don't think she'll stop until, you know, her body gives out. It's crazy to think about what she could accomplish if she really does compete into, let's say, her 40s. I think the question is going to become, can we develop 125-pound challengers? You know, can the you know, Macy Barbers and Miranda Mavericks of the world start to develop and really produce a legitimate challenge? If you look at Miranda Maverick, you know, she's very young. But how long is it going to take her to, you know, be competitive against Valentina? If you asked her right now, how competitive is she against Valentina? She'd probably tell you she's ready, but probably isn't, you know? So,
right.
Or does Valentina, you know, move up to 35 and do the trilogy with Amanda? And there are just so many hurdles to get that fight signed. But yeah, it's Valentina's world right now. We're just living in Brucey.
You know, I'll tell you one thing. If Valentina fights Amanda Nunes at 135, I know the Cyborg fights, you know, was big with Amanda. I know the Rousey fight with Holly and others were big, but I honestly think that'll be the biggest female fight we could ever have.
So TJ, I think that's an interesting disclaimer by Buff, because I'm not so sure. And I think that's a big part of the question. Do the UFC's internal metrics suggest that a trilogy fight between Shevchenko and Nunes, in a series in which Nunes is up 2-0 on paper, even though a lot of us felt like Valentina won the second fight, is it big enough, right, to entice Amanda enough?
No, probably not.
It's not. I mean, I probably hate to say that. I wish it was, because if you're looking at a pure sporting, you know, sense, that's the fight to make. She's earned that fight. Unfortunately, the history, you know, signifies that no, it's probably not what is next, being up 2-0. And also, too, just from a metric standpoint, it doesn't headline a pay-per-view. It should. It just doesn't.
Well, you got to combine it with another fight, really? You know, but I see what John's saying. I don't think Amanda might accept it. I don't think she might accept it.
Well, there are a couple things with Amanda. Obviously, monetarily, they could make it worth her while. And for Valentina, too, you know, there's some navigation there, you know, moving her body up ideally to 141 pounds so as to cut down or whatever. No, I mean, I don't know what she walks at right now, but for Valentina, she would want to make a concerted 6-month commitment, I would think, to put on muscle mass and add the size, you know? So I don't think there's necessarily as big a monetary component with Valentina. And then with Amanda, how many times does she want to cut down to 135 pounds the rest of her career? You know, her next title defense might be one of her toughest against Juliana Pena, who Valentina beat in a blink in a main event in Kansas City back in the day, right? So if you're asking me how many more cuts to bantamweight does Amanda Nunes have, I don't think that many, 2 or 3. So there are a lot of variables. And for Amanda, because she's up 2-0, does she want to put that part of her legacy on the line and give Valentina that opportunity? My instincts tell me no.
I mean, that's a great question. You know, what is the sort of emphasis and impetus for someone like Nunes to do it? But I will say this on the tip of Valentina Shevchenko, and also pose this question to both of you guys, because I feel like we're seeing it to a certain extent. Shevchenko fighting into her, you know, late 40s, 50s, if she wants to do it. I feel like she's the athlete to do it, but I also feel like the window for women is a little bit longer than it is for men. And I don't know if it's necessarily because we see some women not really get into mixed martial arts until their 30s, but that window does seem to be exceedingly longer than their male counterparts.
I think it's a great point. You look at somebody like Marion Renault, who got a late start and competed in the UFC until she was 44, I believe. Mm-hmm. The question beckons for Valentina. I know she keeps herself in great shape, leans into all the recovery stuff, but, you know, she's been mixing the martial arts for, you know, 20 plus years, right? She's been doing martial arts since she was 3 years old or 5 years old. So I don't know. I don't know how her body is going to hold up, but I just really hope that we can round out the division. And again, promotionally speaking, right? You're talking to a play-by-play guy that got excited to call Shevchenko versus Andrade. And the fight was not competitive. And TJ and Bruce, we were told that Valentina was sick as a dog going into that Andrade title defense back in April of this year. And in our fighter meeting, I'll tell your audience only, she looked white as a ghost. I mean, like she looked ill.
Yeah.
And look at how she disposed of the number one contender. So, you know, it's going to be on the UFC to try to develop some of this talent and to find the fighter that we're not thinking of to really challenge her.
She's a beast. And with that being said, let's go on to the featherweight title match, or should I say Rocky One. Wow. Honestly, John, I'm friends with Ortega. He has the heart of a champion. He didn't make the fight. We can go through all the drama here. The third round, one of the greatest rounds, I think, in the history of fights inside the octagon. The fight question is, should it have been stopped, is going to be a key question on my conversation with you today. It wasn't stopped. It turned out to be great. I don't like seeing Brian take that kind of punishment as he did with Holloway and now taking it again. But bonus given or not, that fight was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'm still reeling. Yeah, I'm still reeling 3 or 4 days later. I don't think any of us like seeing T-City take that type of damage. And I can assure you with how twisted that whole referee ringside physician conversation was, that if this was a non-championship affair, that fight would have been stopped. And, you know, I've said on your airwaves before, you know, this is how boxers get really hurt, sometimes fatally. And we're not going to know how damaged Ortega is for years to come.
For years.
Right? I mean, yeah, it's a fractured orbital and he wants to get back on the horse. And he's certainly one of the best fighters in the world, but he has taken a significant amount of damage in these two title shots. And, this is not a recipe for career longevity. So should the fight have been stopped? I really think it's a hard one, especially for the Henner Gracies of the world in the corner, right? Because your guy gets a championship opportunity and it puts you in a really difficult spot, especially when he comes back and wins the fifth round. I think people are leaning too much into the fact that he won the fifth round, because largely I think that's neither here nor there. Volkanovski didn't need to win the fifth round.
Right.
But that just fuels those who think the fight should not have been stopped because Brian was still competitive, even though he was probably ground out, you know?
I think the answer as to whether the fight should have been stopped will probably play out over the next 2 to 3 Brian Ortega fights. And if Ortega doesn't find himself back in the championship mix, then people are going to say, depending on how he doesn't win those fights, if he's stopped or anything like that, they're going to say, well, you know, it goes back to that Volkanovski fight. But the bottom line was that was one of the most insane fights I've ever seen in UFC championship history.
Most insane fights. And also too, the, you know, the bench is so thick and at the featherweight division, Brian's, you know, back on maybe a year plus before he even gets a chance for a title fight. I do not see a rematch happening here. Obviously the broken orbital is going to keep him out for 3 to 6 months. And Volkanovski is going to definitely have to fight again. Who's his next opponent, John?
So it's interesting, right? So you have this fight between Max Holloway and Yair Rodriguez on November 13th.
Yeah.
And I think if that fight were to fall apart again for any reason, then you would have Max Holloway and Volkanovski in a trilogy. And if I'm Alexander Volkanovski, that's the fight that I am pursuing right now to get clarity, to get finality. The second fight between Volkanovski and Holloway was close, right? I'd have to watch it back, honestly, because of the time that has elapsed to tell you who I thought won it. But Volkanovski is an absolute warrior and absolutely needs to be celebrated after this win. I mean, look at his wins list, right? Holloway twice, Jose Aldo, Chad Mendez, you add a Brian Ortega. It's absolutely incredible what he has done. Certainly if Yair Rodriguez beats Holloway, I think that would be the fight that you would make. But now you have a calendar issue, right? Because that fight's not happening till November. When does Volkanovski want to defend the title? But let me just say this about Volkanovski, right? He had a point to prove because, well, for more reasons than one, you're the champion, you're always the hunted. But, you know, there was a lot of noise that Holloway was the uncrowned champion. So Volkanovski had a point to prove. And it's not just the toughness, it's his technical ability to get out of these submissions. But offensively, look what he accomplished in this fight offensively, right? He was already, you know, top five pound for pound. But now when I talk about Volko and I talk about him as being one of the best pound for pound fighters in the world, like I really believe it with every ounce of my being, you know.
I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, it's great. Listen, Australia is going crazy. My email and
I bet
direct messaging has been going off the hook from the fans in Australia, loving the fact that Alexander won. I like Alexander. I love him in his post interview. I love his honesty and his humbleness that he says, I was gurgling. I was ready to go. I didn't even know how, so many words, how I made it out of that. It was one of the most dramatic moments I've ever seen in our sport that could have turned around where Brian could have been crowned champion at that given moment, proving the beauty of mixed martial arts. And it doesn't matter how it can turn at any second. So this fight had every bit of drama, every bit of everything you could possibly put into it. I never like to see fighters get hurt. I know you mentioned that, John. TJ, I know you the same way. But the entertainment value we got out of it was tremendous. I just hope that the longevity of Brian Ortega continues because you cannot fight like this every time. You just can't.
Yeah, no, and he's not going to be fighting for the belt anytime soon. And I think his next fight, whether it's a 5-round main event, title eliminator type fight or what, to TJ's point, it's going to be very telling. But he's a tremendously skilled individual, has every bit of that Los Angeles breaded toughness that you could possibly want.
Right.
I mean, the heart is just, I can't even relate to it, you know? But again, the visuals at the end of round three, TJ, right, with him laying on the canvas, you know, I mean, it's like some of these doctors and referees, and I say this with all due respect to your friend Herb Dean, right? Some of these referees and doctors don't give a shit about, you know, that the fans want the fight to continue or that there's a belt on the line. You know, fighter safety is always at the beginning of their
absolute
forefront. And I think that it's just a very difficult ask, you know, to have a referee in a championship fight, you know, do what a lot of us perceive to be right. I don't even know where I stand on this particular stoppage, but I just think, I don't know, man, you know, this ain't going to do nothing for Brian long-term, Bruce. This is concerning. I mean,
real quick, how important was it that Brian was basically prone in his corner at the end of round three? If he wasn't in his corner, that'd have been real bad.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. The doctor wasn't getting the responses he was looking for.
No.
And yet the fight continued. So what are we doing exactly? You know,
exactly. Exactly.
So is it, and you know, and some say, oh, maybe it's going to take a fatality to affect change. You know, I don't even know.
No, not on my shift, not on your shift, not on any shift. I don't want to see it happen. I'd rather be the first one to go before a fighter. Like I've always said, it's tough. right there. Let me get that notice if it ever happens in the future.
I will say this real quick too, though. If you look at fights from 10 years ago and look at fights today, cuts don't stop fights anymore. And no. I think, you know, we're starting to see concussive blows also really not stop fights the way that they used to.
Well, at least it's not boxing where you get hit, you fall down, you get a 10 count to stand up only to get hit again and fall down. You know, at least when we recognize it,
right.
Barring the controversy over this fight we're talking about, it's stopped in time. So
it's still safer, I guess, than boxing at the end of the day, which to
in
me,
respect
I guess
to
is,
the fight, yeah, not know. In respect to the training.
Sure. No, I agree. I agree with that. I mean, training is a whole nother situation altogether. I think actually where training practices have gotten a lot better over the last 10, 15 years, but you're right.
Exactly. All right. Great night of fights. We got an interesting night coming up this weekend. I'll be back. John, are you here this weekend?
I am not. I'll be back October 9th for Mackenzie Dern's first main event.
John Anik, would you like to stay over and go to the Raider game with me on October 10th?
Wow.
I'm announcing again on October 10th. We can talk about it.
I got people. That sounds very appealing.
Yeah, I got people standing in line that want to go. Even our buddy Zach Andino. It's like I'd love to take Zach too. But if you stayed over, you know, that could be a weekend we can enjoy the Raider game.
Man, you're speaking my language.
Okay. By the way, as we're on the topic of the Raider game, they're 3-0 now. First time in 19 years.
Yep.
I'm having a tuxedo made with the Raider logo on the back. I'm waiting to get the okay on. That looks incredible. But as superstitious as teams go, they don't want me to wear anything other than that outfit I've been wearing for the last two appearances as we move forward.
Where did that directive come from? Can I ask?
That as far as?
To not change your suit.
The guy, my man, Justin, who's the head of it, is like, they're also tickle pink with everything. And then he's like, yeah, I'll see if I can get the okay for the jacket. Then after the win, he's like, I don't know. We may need to just keep you in the same, that jacket, which I was going to wear every game anyway. There's superstition. So who knows how it'll fall. We'll see.
You need to benefit from that superstition. So if they're still undefeated when that happens, and then you do the announcement and they win again, you need to say, well, clearly you need to employ me for every home game.
Yeah, I'm already. No, that's done.
Oh, so it's every home game.
Oh, yeah. No, if I can make, they want me every game. They want me all the way through to the Super Bowl in 2024. The reaction's been tremendous.
Perfect.
No, I'm the Raider guy now. And I'm not because my Eagles are playing like shite, but they are playing like shite. So I think I got to enjoy my Raiderdom right now. Sorry, Philadelphia. I'm still always, my heart is with you. But my God, you know, get some defense. What's going on here?
Well, and how could you not root for the Raiders in the AFC, given your alignment with the franchise now? I mean, I know you're an LA guy, but you never rooted for the California teams because of your Philadelphia roots,
right.
Obviously. So it's not like you ever like rooted for the Rams, you know, so no. The Raiders should be your team, you know?
Yeah. No, Rams, you didn't call.
The Eagles sure as shit aren't going anywhere.
What's that?
Respectfully, I don't think your Philadelphia Eagles are going anywhere. I mean, they have a lot of talent, but a lot of it's young.
Yeah, a lot of it's young. They got to regroup the team. And my heart will always be with them. Let me say that for public note. I love Philadelphia. I love the Philadelphia Eagles. I love the Phillies, you know, the Flyers, the whole nine yards. But the bottom line is I'm having a great time with the Raiders. It's been incredible. The reaction has been incredible. I can't begin to tell you the feeling of being in front of 70,000 or more people doing I do. It's amazing. And if you go with me, John, you'll get the feel. You'll be right there beside me. It's very, Kitty and I went and it was incredible. And then when she and I were sitting in our suite, you're going to love this. Two suites to the right is Dan Marino. I sent you this.
Yes.
4 minutes left in the game. They're down, 10, 11 points, whatever it was. He left. And 2 minutes later, they're tied in one of the greatest games of the season so far. As part owner or whatever, all respect to Dan Marino. I'm a huge fan of Dan Marino. But my gosh, you don't get up and leave, right? You fight to the end. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, I have a historically awful, awful story about leaving a game early, Bruce, right? I mean, when Adam Vinatieri made the kick in the snow that led to the New England Patriots Super Bowl championship, this came after the famed tuck rule fumble from Tom Brady, right? So I'm a Patriots fan in the building in the snow, and Tom Brady fumbles the football.
Oh,
so I fucking get up and go to my car, and then I hear this big roar. I go racing back to the stadium to try to get back in the building because the call got overturned and they wouldn't let me back in the building. So I could appreciate Dan Marino wanting to beat the traffic, and not for nothing. I watched that whole game, Buff. Miami had no business being like, I know some people say, oh, Dolphins plus 4.5. If you had lost that bet, it would have been a bad beat. Like, oh, I don't know, man. I didn't feel like Miami had any chance to win. So I'm going to pardon the Hall of Famer, Dan Marino. I understand people want to pile on him, but I don't know.
I'll give him a pardon, too. It was just quite fun to be there and to see him get up and leave.
Yeah, like, yeah. This team still lost, so.
All good. All right, a few other things happening in sports. By the way, let's give it to the Raiders. Let's give it to the Rams. Who else is undefeated this season, John?
The Denver Broncos, although they have beaten the laughingstock of the NFL, essentially, right? The Giants, right. The Jets, and the Jaguars. So, but, you know, I believe in Denver a little bit. You know, Teddy Bridgewater, man, has just exceeded all of my expectations. So Broncos are still undefeated. I don't think the Rams have lost a football game, so they look probably like the best team on paper right now.
Yeah, but we'll see.
I mean, obviously, all of us in New England are getting primed for Sunday Night Football as Tom Brady returns to Foxborough to take on the Pats. And I think the Buccaneers are going to smoke New England, but I'm hoping Belichick can pull something out of his ass this weekend. We'll see.
Well, one thing that's always true is when Tom Brady takes a defeat like he took last weekend, he notoriously comes out like a bat out of hell the next week, team and everything, you know, get that coaching together, figure it all out. But you're going against Belichick, you're going against New England, and you're in New England. Can't wait for that for a lot of reasons, which I know you share the same sentiments for. Let's talk about John Jones. John Jones called me last week after I appeared for the Raiders. Haven't spoke to him in a year. We had a wonderful 15-minute conversation, humble as can be, you know, God bless, all this stuff. Really proud of my career, and it was so exciting to see me on the stadium. You interview him for 45 minutes on Friday night. He goes to the Hall of Fame. 4 hours later, he's arrested for domestic abuse, which has now come out. And I'm not trying to cast any aspersion. I'm just talking facts. An assault on his wife. You know, she was found with the bloody lip, the bloody shirt, the blood in the bed. The kid and her down at the hotel lobby, and the kid saying, can you call the police? Not good stuff. He gets arrested, headbutts the car, sends chips of paint up from the car, and supposedly even says something the effect of taking on the officers. Alcohol is a very bad thing for John. There's a lot of demons there. God knows what else, if anything else, was involved with the situation. But this is so disturbing on so many levels. I'm going to say one last thing before any comments from you. This is an athlete like Conor McGregor that could have gone on to make hundreds of millions, if not close to $1 billion in his career. Yep. He made his 20, 30 estimated, whatever it is, with the UFC. It's a tragic situation to see such a potential role model and probably still the greatest MMA fighter ever, skill wise, set wise, to walk in as a goat in the octagon, but yet to have all this happen. It's like go 10 steps forward and 20 steps back, you know? And
yeah, it is really profoundly sad and crazy when you think about the hundreds of millions of dollars that he has left on the table, you know, that could have provided for generations to come. But that is a small part of this whole issue. You know, I will say John Jones one-on-one is just unbelievable. Like, yes. Such a good dude, right? Like, yes. So Buff referenced my 45-minute chat with him, and this was just backstage while Kevin Randleman's widow, I believe, was speaking, accepting the Hall of Fame induction on his behalf. We're just in the back talking, Bruce. His cell phone's nowhere to be found. He's looking you in the eye the whole time. He's totally engaged, asking about my kids, asking about how the job is and what it's like working for Dana and all that stuff, asking about television. And then 6 hours later, obviously, he turns it up and, you know, gets himself in trouble yet again. It's really sad. You know, the family was in great spirits all night. His fiance, Jesse, was welling up with tears as he was accepting the induction. He killed the speech. Everybody was excited for him back at heavyweight.
Such a lovely woman she is.
Okay. Like, I don't drink very often, right? I'm a cannabis guy. I don't drink a lot of alcohol. Okay. But when I do drink, like, I get like sloppy, right? And, you know, I get focused on the opposite sex, right? Some people get angry, right? And if you're synergizing another substance with the alcohol, then who knows? And, you know, obviously, whatever he's doing is having a really bad effect on his decision making late in these evenings and early in these mornings. And obviously, when the kids are involved, you know, as his kids get older, right? Googling daddy, you know, like it's tough stuff, you know. So I don't know, man.
Horrible thing for a child to witness whatever level of domestic abuse happens between their mom and dad. It's just the thought of that is
even for kids seeing verbal abuse, right? Yes. Even for the few times where maybe I don't talk to my wife in the way that I should, they shouldn't see that, you know?
Right. Agreed. So, enough said on that. So hope the demons nice get out.
I'm going to be nice to my wife tonight. I wasn't
really Sounds perfect. Listen, one thing and last thing on John Jones, if you want to get away from the arrest, he's at 250 pounds. He's slowly been going up in weight for a year now, working the muscle, working everything to become a heavyweight. I can't wait to see him fight at a heavyweight. We just don't need this shite. You know, he doesn't need it either. So let's see how this develops and how the UFC handles it, because obviously they got to wait and see the legal ramifications of what is involved here.
And it seems as though his fiance ever by his side was, you know, trying to already help him, you know, I mean, once a domestic violence situation is in the hands of the law, I can tell you from experience, not my own, but of people who are very close to me, you know, sometimes it depends what county you're in and how the history of that county has been in terms of domestic violence. You really don't know exactly how this is going to play out for John. But, you know, he's not looking at extended jail time. And, you know, to those who think that this is the last straw and want it to be, I think they're going to be surprised that he is back, you know, sooner than they think. But it's sad. It's just a sad
situation. It's sad. I'm sure the UFC will do everything they can to make that happen. Another sad situation that's been ongoing for years from a past MMA fighter who fought in the UFC. Jason Mayhem Miller was arrested again for felony domestic abuse, resisting arrest. At this point now, with all his things that have happened to him, he's probably going to wind up in jail on this one. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, I think, And again, another good dude, another guy who's great one-on-one, but just can't seem to get out of his own way, you know? And for him, obviously, you know, once the charges and the arrests start to pile up, obviously the leash gets shorter when it comes to the judges and all that stuff, you know, so.
Exactly. Floyd Mayweather open to fighting Oscar De La Hoya. Wants more than $100 million with all these exhibition fights going on. This one wouldn't be an exhibition, obviously being a professional level. Does that interest you to see Floyd and Oscar go at it at this belated age? And also Manny Pacquiao announced today he's done with boxing. He's not going to box anymore.
So I got into mixed martial arts because I hosted a boxing radio show, essentially. So I covered so much of Manny Pacquiao's prime and so many of the smaller fights of his career I was in the building for. And just what a class act and what a legend. And
very much.
You know, I was a Mayweather guy. So like Pacquiao was never my favorite fighter, but you can see why. I guess Marco Antonio Barrera and Bernard Hopkins were really the guys for me, but you can see Pacquiao was like everybody's favorite fighter because of his style. So I covered De La Hoya Mayweather when it actually mattered. So I don't know if that heightens my appetite to see them do it again or if it lessens it, right? I think because I covered the first one, you know, part of me has a little bit of an appetite for the rematch, but I don't know what that fight's doing for anybody. That would appear to be a very one-sided meeting in 2021.
All it's doing for anybody is lining their pockets with money.
Doesn't John Anik own like the ugliest money team hat on the planet? Yeah, there it is. The ugliest one on the planet.
Let me see it. I can't see John.
Terrible looking. Looks good on him, but terrible when it's not on him.
Money, 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 money.
Oh, my God. Look at that thing. Money. Jeez. It looks like the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, exactly. Look at that. Look at that.
But wow. I got it in Mexican colors. You see?
Yes, okay, is that what that is? Okay, yeah, I like that. That's better.
Hey, guys, Tyron Woodley got his finger tattooed. I love Jake Paul. I think he's going to have to enjoy the tattoo because I do not see that fight happening again.
Man of his word.
TJ probably doesn't want to hear this, but it's like for those out there, I love tattoo bets. Okay. I've done four of them in my life. If you are doing a tattoo bet, design the premise around a tattoo that you want or that you would be okay having on your body for the rest of your life. Like tattoo bets are great, but like, why would anyone do a tattoo bet for something like I love Jake Paul and have to look down at that for right? Like, you don't think my 209 tattoo has aged gracefully, right? Like I love looking down at this fucking thing.
Yeah, it's aged gracefully, but every time Tyron picks his nose, he's going to see I love Jake Paul going in for the kill. I don't get it. Yeah.
There are ways to creatively do a tattoo bet without having it be something that you regret. Like real quick, Bruce, the first tattoo bet I ever did was if Betch Kohea beat Ronda Rousey, I was going to get the Brazilian flag tattooed on my inner forearm. And at that point, I'd been to Brazil 24 times. That nation holds a tremendous place in my heart, right? So I didn't expect Ronda to lose to Betch, you know, but had she, like, I would have been okay having the Brazilian flag tattooed on me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it.
I think that was a very safe bet.
Yeah, but so was Nate Diaz to lose to Conor McGregor. It really was.
I mean, the, you know, we did Usman Masvidal too, you know, the game bread tattoo bet that appeared safe to people. There's always risk though, you know?
Always risk. I know you're a Michael Jordan fan and they just auctioned off a very important piece of garment he wears.
His underwear?
Yeah, his underwear went for almost $3,000. The final bid at $2,784 for his underwear.
How about that? Well, let me tell you, I'm not a Michael Jordan fan. I'm a Larry Bird fan and I'm a Kobe Bryant fan. So
there you go.
But Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. Best two-way player ever. Sure. For sure.
I'm a Kevin Garnett fan. You're welcome, Boston.
Well, and you know what, TJ, you talk about good human beings that resonate with that city. Like Kevin Garnett is getting his number 5 retired and he didn't spend that many years in Boston. Right. And they're running out of numbers in Boston. He deserves that so much, man. He made such an impact on that city. And if you were ever going to retire a number for a guy who was only there for like 4 or 5 years, that's the guy. I'm really happy that they had the stones to do that, you know.
Minnesota, absolutely, the backbone behind so many Boston championships. You got the Celtics, you got David Ortiz and the Red Sox. You're welcome. You're welcome, Boston.
That's awesome. Two more things real quick on the collectible end. Abe Lincoln's death certificate is going up for sale. They figure the asking price will be $425,000. That sounds very reasonable.
See, that's cheaper than I would think. Like, I think that's super historic. I mean, I don't know what the historical collectible market is like, but that'd be something that'd be the masterpiece of many collections, I would think.
I would think so. There's so much drama around that death certificate, obviously, for obvious reasons. And another thing too, my UFC 257 Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier cards just set a record in my sales of my handheld Octagon cards. The actual Poirier McGregor card, the single card, sold for $3,800.
Wow.
And the rest of the cards in the set sold for $1,274. It came out to about $5,500, breaking the record for a previous set, which was the Amanda Nunes Cyborg set that sold for $4,800.
Which is what Dan Lambert paid all that, didn't he?
Dan Lambert bought the card for $4,200 while other people bought other stuff. In this case, this was not Dan Lambert. This was another buyer. So they just set a new record, $5,500 for a set of cards.
It's great. Incredible.
Crazy.
No, I mean, that's a great souvenir. There's nothing like that in terms of a souvenir, right? A handheld announcer card, you know?
Yeah. I don't mean to blow my own horn. It's just, I know it's a one of a kind, you know?
Yeah.
Collecting industry is so big out there. And that's why, John, as we always talk, everything you write, all your production cards, money, money, money. Don't throw those things away.
I have a fighter card library right behind me of I think over 5,000 handwritten cards or something. It's crazy.
When you're ready, I got the man for you. My man who does this, I'll set you all up.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a little tricky, right? Because I need the information. So I have to figure out a digital system.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And but we'll get there. We'll get there.
So who else, last story before we sign off, who owns a Roomba? You know, those automatic.
I have one.
Well, they just came out one now that has some, whatever that term is, knowledge, AI knowledge in it, that it will avoid smearing dog poop all over your house. Because the problem with the Roomba is that when it hit dog
poop.
That's
a real thing. Let me tell you, that is a real thing. It's not a fun thing either. Well,
now you got a new one. It avoids the dog poop.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah. My wife and I had it prior to having dogs, and then the dog did the thing and we weren't home. And yeah, it was a whole piece of art.
All right, buddy. I want to thank a sponsor real quick before we sign off. FanDuel. Everybody check out FanDuel for your betting on sports, fantasy sports, the whole bit. My ambassadorship with FanDuel is continuing. Puncher's Chance just came out in Alabama and Pennsylvania, selling through the roof. And you know where it sells? One of the biggest markets we have is Florida, John, where you live. And It's Time Energy, big hit in the UK after being released on Amazon, will be here in the States within the next couple months. So things are rocking and rolling on my end, and things are rocking and rolling on our end. So let me hear about John Anik. What's going on with you, Johnny?
Nothing about me, just parting note on a UFC athlete to show you how quickly it can happen, right? Chris Dawkins is UFC heavyweight. He is 4-0 in the UFC with as many knockouts, right? Rumblings that he might get a main event against Derek the Black Beast Lewis. And I said on the broadcast this weekend, right? that Chris said last week before he knocked out Shamil Abdurakhimov and looked even better than he had in his previous fight. He said he wants to go down as the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. And I brought it up on the broadcast, and DC kind of laughed a little bit because he's just getting going. You know, he devoted 10 years of his life to being a cop.
Right.
Now he's training full time, and look at him now. And it just speaks to the power of self-belief, you know, because Stipe Miocic, when he got knocked out by Stefan Struve in a main event in Nottingham, England in 2012, no one thought he was going to go down and be the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. So why not Dawkus? I don't know. That's inspired me. So I don't know. My kicker today is Dawkus, not a plug of the Anakin Florian podcast.
I'm very happy you brought him up because I had a note here to talk about him because there was a couple people I wanted to, you know, say that did great on the show. Dawkus, you know, Philadelphia boy.
Get him on. It's time. I mean, he's from Philly.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. You know, I'll definitely just, does Felder know how to get a hold of him? Or of course.
I got you. As long as you tell him, I would love to have him on.
I'd love to have him on. I even said after he won, I go, Philadelphia, baby. And he had a big smile on his face. Yeah, and, you know, it was great. But
he doesn't root for the Raiders, Buff. Unlike you, he doesn't root for them. I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Sometimes a lot of money cuts a lot of family ties. Just kind of kidding. TJ, what's up?
What's going on? Thursday, I'm going to Cancun on UFC Fight Pass. We've got the debut of Medusa, which is all women's submission grappling event. It's combat jiu-jitsu and EBI rules. Check that out. And then on Sunday, it is combat jiu-jitsu worlds, the middleweights, I believe. 16-man one-night tournament with slap fighting, essentially. As Eddie Bravo hates it when we call that, but it's a good time down in Cancun.
Very, very cool.
One quick thing. If you go to UFC.com right now, they sort of did an embedded style feature last week. I had a camera crew with me the whole time, followed me to my room. TJ might enjoy seeing me do my voiceovers in my room and my inability to keep my body quiet. But it's like an 8-minute video on UFC.com. It's International Fight Week with John Anik and all sorts of behind the scenes stuff from the Hall of Fame. And I think it's probably in this day and age in which people enjoy behind the scenes content, it's a good inside look at what my fight week entailed. So if you want to check that out at UFC.com, a lot of people worked hard to put that together.
Remote voiceovers the worst, John. Like I hate doing them. Like I always worry about my neighbors being like ornery with me. And when I do it at home, I do it in my car and then people freak out because I'm acting like a lunatic in my driveway. It's the worst.
I can't tell you how many times there'll be a fighter filming me like outside the room. And then I'll finish my voiceovers and I'll go on social media and they're filming. Yeah. That's why you try to be a one or two take guy. Otherwise you really upset the neighbors.
I just brought it up under videos on UFC.com and I'm going to watch this after my interview while I'm working.
Thanks, my man. John. I appreciate that.
And check it out. Absolutely. I don't want to miss this. All right, everybody, I'll see you from the Octagon on Saturday. What do we have here? Saturday. Johnny Walker, Thiago Santos back. That's going to be fun.
Right? Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah, meeting. Kevin Holland, Kyle Dawkus. That's going to be fun.
The card's actually quite deep. So,
what is? Yeah, the card's very deep. Yeah, Misha Serkinov, Krzysztof Jocko, Oliveira's back, Nico Price.
Yep.
That's not a typical fight night card by any means.
Yeah. You mentioned Betch Cohea. She's back fighting Carol Rosa.
Betch Cohea is fighting this weekend in the UFC, huh?
Yeah, Betch Cohea is fighting Carol Rosa in the bantamweight in the prelims.
How about that?
Okay, cool.
I got my eyes on that Aspen Ladd Macy Shassin fight. I'm sort of hyper focused on like the women at 25 and 35 right now to see what's going to play out because I'm like obsessed with this Valentina Shevchenko. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I'm obsessed with her too. You know, it was so nice when she was walking out and she didn't have to, but she broke away from the crowd and she came over and gave me a big hug.
Yeah.
That meant so much to me. The respect from fighters after their wars. It's awesome. Awesome.
Well, thanks for having me, boys. Always good to chop it up with you guys. TJ, great to see you. Buff, my man. I will see you, I guess, middle of October. Abu Dhabi's right around the corner too.
So. Yeah. And then we got New York the next week, right?
I think I'm going to see you guys in New York. Well, awesome. I'll be there. I don't know if I'll see you. I didn't see either of you in Vegas.
No, well, New York can be different.
I'm surprised we didn't cross paths when I came back up there to do the post-fight show. But hopefully in New York City, we can shake hands. Too.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
I'm going to come all the way back to LA. Assume you're going back to Florida and then back to New York, right, John?
No, I'm staying the whole time.
Oh, you are? Yeah, I can't do that. I got to get back. Okay, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your videos coming in on Cameo, your Cameo orders, your orders for brucebuffer.com. You are keeping me very, very, very busy, and I'm loving every single minute of it. I will see you from the Octagon on Saturday night. and have a great week. John, love you, brother. Always great to have you on the show. And I'm kind of bummed that we were not going to see each other for a few weeks, but we'll be talking.
We'll be talking. Love you, boys. Thanks for having me. And we'll be watching this weekend.
Love you too, John. Love you too. TJ, much love, my brother, my producer, and everybody. Set your goals, write them down, learn about everything you need to know about. So when you step on that golden path to your future, you be the best you can be, whether you're first, second, third champion, you name it. If you're performing your best, then you're winning. And that's what we're all about in this time radio. And that's what all about I am in my life. It's about being the best you can be, winning, and being a role model to your sphere of influence. With that note, have a great week. I'll see you next week. Buffer out.